Hello and welcome to High Velocity Business Radio. This is Sander Bean. I'm sitting in for my co-host today, Desiree Scales, who's not with us, and I'm also here with Kevin.
Hey, Sander, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How are you, Kev?
I'm glad to have you in the studio. I'm sad that we don't have our other host here, but Desiree will be back next week, and I won't have you, so it's like a trade-off.
We don't. But interestingly enough, we do have another person from Chicago with us today. And with the weather that we've been having around here, this horrific winds outside, it seems like it's going from spring to winter in just one day here. Thought it would be appropriate that we bring on someone from Chicago. What do you say?
I say that's a great idea.
Great. Well, with us today, we have Mike Corain. Mike, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. I will definitely argue the fact that you guys do not know what winter is down in Atlanta. But, you know, a nice 35-degree cold spell down there today will probably wake you up to the reality of it, but just think it could always be worse because it's -5 right here.
Right, and now. I would love to say that that's the reason we're calling you, Mike, is just to feel better about the weather this winter. However, we wanted to bring you on because of your experience and interest in what you've been doing and your thoughts in the industries that you serve. So as a way of introduction, I wanted to introduce you by saying that Mike Corain is the owner of Listen Incorporated based in Chicago. His firm has been successful over the last 18 years in helping clients around the country leverage technology to grow existing business and capture new markets. Mike is a career entrepreneur and salesman and knows what it takes to run a successful business in a competitive environment. So, Mike, again, welcome. And perhaps you can start us out here by telling us just a little bit about Listen Inc. and what you do in Chicago.
Well, Listen Inc. is a telecommunications company, formerly known in a previous life as, an interconnect company. We consult and talk to clients and sell them products, such as the phones that people have on their work desk, and integrate that. And one of my niches over the last 5 to 7 years has really been this big mobility play. And as I like to tell clients, we sell $500 phones that sit on your desks, and the most important phone is the one you pull out of your pocket. And how do we integrate those two devices and make it seamless? So for, no matter if you're in your office or you're halfway around the country, you have access to all the things that you have from a technology standpoint. Yeah. And the benefit I think that we have is that we're not AT&T, we're not Comcast. We really believe in our heart of hearts on truly getting down to what the application is. And from our standpoint, that's everything. And that doesn't mean we sell one product. It might mean we have to sell 3 or 4 products to achieve the goals of the client. And I think it's so critical in this everyday life, and customer service is everything to us. We have championed clients, and we want raving clients about what we do, and that's really our bottom line. Because in this day and age, is you sit on hold or you stand in line, no matter if it's cable TV or telecommunications, or you're waiting in this world, and the frustration that grows in people's lives with customer service, it's something that we provide, I think as good, if not better than anybody.
Yep. Now, one thing that's interesting for me, Mike, as you go through this a little bit, is, the name of your company, Listen Incorporated. And I think they always say, well, what is in a name? I think it's interesting that your name is so central to what it is that your business is all about. And while we've go through time and you've been in business now for 18 years, it's interesting that your name still remains relevant in that. And I'm curious as to how you came up with the name Listen Incorporated as the name of your company.
Well, it's pretty funny. One of my best friends worked for years at a big advertising firm. His name is Tom Rape, so that I at least give him the the credos for that. But the we sat around. I had a former partner at the time, and we sat around, and him and one of his cronies literally came up with about seven names and things, and Truly Listen Inc. was, I think, what embodied what we were trying to do. You know, as people say in the sales business, God gave you two ears and one mouth, so listen twice as much as you talk. And we really believe in that philosophy. And that gets to application selling, and it gets to, you know, as I like to say, we may not be the perfect fit for every client, but, you know, it takes, you know, a mutual feeling for us and them to get together as clients and build a relationship. And so much of that is listening and seeing, you know, what they like and they don't like, and commonalities and things, just which is natural sales process stuff. And we really believe strongly in the art of listening to clients, because clients know what they want. They may not know how to get there, but they typically know exactly what they want.
Well, and that's interesting to me, because really, when you're forming your own company, and this is something that I went through recently myself, you're trying to brand not only what it is you're doing, but the way in which you're doing it. So it appears to me, at least, that when you started out in this venture, you were yourselves thinking, okay, how are we going to approach the market? How will it be different? And how will it create opportunities and sales for you ultimately?
Yeah, and I briefly touched on commonality, and it's pretty funny how incestuous business is. One of my larger clients is a large real estate firm, and when you show them how to do their telecommunications a little bit differently, and it's going to, you know, improve their everyday life and improve their agents' everyday life, it's really funny how your best advertising and marketing, it comes from the other people in the industry. And, you know, we were able to for whatever reason, gain a niche that is the real estate market, because nobody wanted to be outdone by another company. And so we've worked with all the large real estate companies in Chicagoland based on them not wanting to let their competition get one up on them. And it's been a very interesting from that standpoint. But as I said, the commonalities to me in sales are just such a huge, huge advantage if you can pull those out. You know, one of the questions I have my sales reps ask all the time is, you know, have you ever made a decision like this in telecommunications or anything? And, you know, and people are usually pretty upfront and will say, you know, we've looked at AT&T and we've looked at, you know, Siemens Rome, and we looked at Avaya, and we've looked at all these. And, you know, the last two decisions we made were AT&T. Well, you know, in my world, you know, that's a red flag of very interesting. But, you know, these are people that make decisions and probably are very conservative companies. So, you know, one of the things we wanted to do is kind of really, you know, if we're going to get 200 clients this year, we want to make sure they're the right clients. We don't want to make sure that, you know, that somebody is making a decision that they're going to regret.
So almost from
all really is based on, in my opinion, finding out, you know, too much about your client.
Right. I was just going to say, from the start, it seems like the business was designed to build long-term clients, maybe fewer of them than having to go every single day and looking for more and more and more clients. So you have what you basically boils down to a common group of people who really that you understand head to toe, and therefore you can bring every solution as times change. And I think what's amazing to me about this is probably this is why your business has been so successful over time, and we're going to get into that. But I was hoping maybe you could tell us a little bit, like how has the mission possibly changed at all over the last 18 years?
You know what? I want to add one thing to what we were talking about,
because
okay,
go ahead.
It's such a critical piece of it, is we based our customer service on a Harvard Business Review article called Total Client Satisfaction. And to take a long story short, it said about 90 percentile of clients are satisfied. But out of those clients, they're not going to recommend you. They're just satisfied. On the other end, if you have clients that are totally satisfied, they're going to recommend you two out of every three times. And if you really start to look and roll up your sleeves and things like that, and to see what we stand for and what our philosophy is, that really is an article that, you know, in a nutshell describes what we're trying to achieve. To answer your second question, or to answer your question, the challenges, the evolution of our industry over the last 18 years has been pretty tremendous. We've gone from, you know, technology-wise, from electronic to analog to digital to where we are now in the IP world of how we communicate. And basically, to simplify it, is we've gone from strings and cans to a little bit fancier string and a little bit fancier can. Rather than it having a string attached to it, probably is easier to think of it as a laser that is beaming and it's sending packets opposed to actually being connected. And it's a huge turn, because I think companies like ours can maintain a lot more telecommunication systems with a lot less technical people, because you don't have a voice network and a data network. And then, as well as from the standpoint of the clients being able to self-maintain their equipment, it becomes a lot simpler. So some of the things that I say I'm very happy about, some of the things, I'm not going to say they're not good for our business, but we always would generate a lot of revenue on a monthly basis in MAC work, move, add, and change work. The guy that needs his phone moved from point A to point B. With the new technology, that is not necessary. So our MAC revenues have declined dramatically, and that's not just ours. It's just across the board in our business. But the amount of bodies that we need to have in our office has been reduced as well. So in the old days, I would need about 5 techs for 100,000 ports, which is basically phone instruments. Now I need probably 2 techs for 200,000.
Is it because the technology is becoming more intuitive for the end user to do it themselves, or is it really just people, you know, they've, like you said before, they've got the device in their pocket and what's on their desk collects a lot of dust?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of those two things. I mean, I agree with what they have in their pocket. You know, and I think you remember, and in full disclosure, Sander and I worked way back in the day.
I meant to get that in.
But it's full disclosure.
Yeah.
You know, it's the new millennium, for crying out loud. We've got to say that. But yeah. the fact is, we used to sell something called disaster recovery. Mm. And the fact of the matter is, your disaster recovery is in your pocket now. If your phone goes down in front of you, you go to your cell phone and you don't miss a beat. Whereas, you know, back in the day when we didn't have cell phones and all of that stuff, you needed a plan. You know, I mean, we've seen crazy things like in this city where the basement of all buildings were flooded and put a halt and a grind to the city, the Board of Trade, the Board of Options, because somebody had poked a hole through a deep tunnel somewhere and it flooded all the basements and all the downtown buildings. And at that point, we really didn't have any disaster plans for that kind of stuff. So, you know, the average business disaster recovery is in their pocket. And so that has changed, but it has changed a lot with cell phones. I mean, I say it all the time. If I was going to open a business and I was going to have a couple of salespeople, I don't think I'd even get phone lines. I think I would give them all cell phones and be able to communicate. And one of the things that I've always said is we still have these behemoth old school telephony companies that are controlling the circuits that come into people's offices. And I think it's going to take one really sharp and really good wireless company to decide that they want that business and bring circuits in and control all of the circuits through their headquarters, but those would be controlled by the wireless companies rather than the land-based companies because it's more critical. If your cell phone goes down, you're probably going to get it fixed within the next 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
If your desk phone breaks, you're going to call somebody in IT or you're going to call the phone person, and you know, if it's there, it's there. So it has completely radically changed how the thought process is.
Right. It's almost like going upside down as to where it was before. I mean, before
it is.
Yeah.
It is, to tell you, a client I'm working with right now, and we happen to be with Comcast on that client, and it's a good story because it tells they were having some and PRI, primary rate T1. So their voice comes in on a big pipe that feeds all of their phones. Essentially, they were having some problems with their voice, and we got that all straightened out through the carrier. But recently, they have had problems with their internet connection, and this client's ready to, after 2 days, you know, and they weren't down. They were just incredibly slow, but after 2 days, the client wants to throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they had voice problems that took two to four weeks to resolve, and they wasn't that big of a deal. And now for 2 days, they're slow on the internet, and they're ready to start tossing people. And it just goes to show that, you know, data, if it isn't as important, it's really very, very close, if not more important than the actual voice side of the world.
And the weird thing is, like, you know, we're talking on a landline today, I'm presuming up to Chicago, correct?
Yep.
So the weird thing is we all put up with drop calls. We all put up with really kind of sketchy connections at times, and it's just normal now. We just expect that that's the way it's going to go. So we almost try to cut it short with the voice conversations, keep the voice conversations to a minimum, and we're relying much more on that data. Can you know, what are you seeing with your clients? Where are we going with this? What's the end state look like?
And that's a great question. I think, in my mind, in my opinion, and it's one man's opinion, is I don't know how many $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 phone systems I'm going to sell anymore with $500 phones on people's desks. I really believe it's going to take one very good wireless company to kind of put our industry on its ear. Because, you know, what I've seen in our business is, you know, we talk about deflation. And in our business, what I sold 15 years ago for $100,000 now costs $50,000. And I sell products that I could sell to clients and it could be $25,000. So the fact of the matter is people are buying the same thing, but it's costing them much less. And the reason is because it's mostly software-based. I used to roll in refrigerators to clients. Now I put the equivalent to a 1U server in their facility that lights up 500 phones.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just less hardware. There's less cost to that. And I think eventually people will have a combination of the two. And they're not going to have a $100,000 system, but they'll have a $20,000, $25,000 system that integrates with their cell phones. And their cost, their circuit costs, their data costs, their wireless costs will be a lump sum. And it's one of the things that still cracks me up about the wireless industry, because they do things that just I shake my head at, because all they care about is minutes now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's they're trying to fight everybody for metering both data and minutes, and it's like, oh, we don't want the wireless companies don't want to introduce all this whiz bang fancy stuff that everybody's smartphone could do, because if you're talking over an IP connection or you're using that phone to get you out of your office using your wireless network and an IP connection, you're not using minutes. And I just find it almost funny that they're fighting this fight that they're never going to win. You know, people are, I'm seeing in television shows, in mainstream television shows, where a guy's on an airplane using voice over IP with a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that exists. It's existed for 7 or 8 years now. And the wireless companies do not like it because they're not using minutes. But as I like to say, if they were able to recoup that with everything else they're doing and bringing in circuits and bandwidth and all the other things, it makes complete sense. And there's some European companies that have been very cutting edge and very aggressive trying to do this, because in Europe there were so few landlines really to begin with, that you know, the cell phone world has exploded, and obviously in Asia, in China specifically, because they had no communication. And, and you know, you can buy a burner phone for $35, and that person can be linked up and talking to people immediately. So the United States is not the cutting edge of the wireless world.
We seem to be
like
more
like to think.
Yeah, and what you're saying is, I think, if, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're kind of saying is we're more focused on the marketing aspects, and they've got the concentration in all the wrong places. As a quick story, I was watching, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Portlandia, comedy show that's on Netflix now. But these guys, they were just lampooning the fact that these cell phone companies, when you go into their store, they start telling you about all the different plans that they have for minutes and free this and weekends and all these kinds of things, and just bamboozling these two unsuspected people who just want to get, you know, a basic plan. So it really it hits home to what you were saying, how silly it is.
And I think the wireless companies, I've often said this, and one of my ideas has been, and I've been laughed out of a lot of business meetings about it, because which tells me one thing: either I'm on the right track or I'm just way off. Is you've got a retail store that's usually, you know, between 1,000 and 1,500 square feet, and you've got people selling cell phones out of it. And I've always said, why can't you sell everything out of it? I'm going to sell you the smartphone. I'm going to sell you the iPhone. I'm going to sell you the BlackBerry or the Google Book or the Google operating system. I'm going to do all that. But how does this integrate? How does this help my life? How does that integrate with my telecommunications that I have in my office? And I really believe in my heart of hearts is that those stores could be producing a lot more revenue. And you know, it takes one phone system sale a month to, you know, add significant profit, because the margins on cell phones and carriers, they're very slim.
And getting less all the time, it seems like. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And you sit there and you go, this is all really cool stuff, but if these guys can't figure out how to make money at it, then we're going to have problems. And you know, we're not going to get the latest devices. The latest devices are going to go into areas where they know they can make money. I mean, in China, for example, an iPhone is, you know, it's not a God-given right like it is in our nation. It's, you know, it's a $200 phone there, and, you know, it's a status symbol. So, you know, I believe that, you know, there are, you know, in China, there are 4 or 5 manufacturers you've never even heard of that make very, very good, robust smartphones that work in that market. And, you know, we don't even get to see a full array of devices because we're so caught up in the Google and the iPhone, and, you know, BlackBerry is, you know, I'm not going to tell you they're coming back because I think they're
toast. Yeah.
They're a long way from coming back. But I think that when I look at it, it's going to take somebody to do things differently instead of the same. I mean, you talk about an incestuous business. I mean, when T-Mobile says we're going to pay for your termination fees, and then everybody else follows, or T-Mobile says give us an extra $15 a month and you can change your phone whenever you want, you know, and everybody follows suit, and it's just. That's the world that business is. Nobody's doing something radically different.
So tell us, Mike. Then go ahead. I wanted to get this in. What do you see coming out of that story? Because I think this is an interesting idea. What sorts of things would you envision could be marketed, especially from a business to business perspective?
Well, I think you said it in that television show, which I haven't seen. But first and foremost, there should be three packages. There mm-hmm. should be small, medium, large. You know, and it should be so simple. And the first guy that simplifies everything is to me the guy that's going to win, because it has to be user friendly. Like you said, add this on and unlimited text, and you got to do this, and you got to do it's too complicated. So if you know you're going to pay $50 and you can go to the buffet and eat as much as you want, that's all people really want to know. I don't think people care about saving $1.50 on their cell phones. And that you know, now they got to look at their texts and all the other things. So they've got to listen to their clients more, because everybody's trying to do exactly what you said, trying to, you know, it's like a used car sales game. You know, oh, I got this guy signed up for $70 a month. Well, you know, and the problem with those carriers is they have so many legacy clients that are paying more. They don't want to bite the bullet and make everybody happy. If I'm paying $70 right now and you're paying $50, well, they're not going to come to me and say, well, you know what, Mike, you can pay $50. We'll make that work now. So it's the shell game. It's smoke and mirrors, and we'll see on the technology side of smartphones. You know, they're going to get faster. They're going to get smaller. They're going to get thinner, obviously. It's, you know, I also have said for probably 3 years now, apps are dead. Apps are dying. When you create a website now, you can make it mobile friendly. And so why, if it's a mobile friendly website, I've now made the device agnostic. You know, I don't care if you're on a Chrome. I don't care if you're on an iPhone, a BlackBerry. I don't care what smartphone device you have, as long as you have a web browser. You're going to get into the mobile site. I don't need to spend a lot of money developing apps. And as the phones get faster and the bandwidth gets higher, and that's really the cell phone world right now, is how much bandwidth can I get from my cell phone, and how fast can it operate?
That's a fascinating perspective, because I've thought this myself just recently, like looking at my phone and how many apps, and even my iPad, how many apps are on there. And it's all fine and well when it's just a few, but pretty soon you got one for the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, and you're just so full of apps, you might as well be, you know, just searching what you need out of a favorites chart or anything else off of your web browser.
Well, and the reason you needed apps when the iPhone 3 came out, mm-hmm. or the 2 or whatever the original one and the subsequent, is they didn't have enough bandwidth in the background to run these apps and run your phone. So let's put it locally on the hard drive of the phone, right? When you open it, all the graphics and stuff are right there. I don't have to go out to the internet to get that, so all I'm doing is filling in the lines. Well, subsequently, now we're at LTE, and they're calling it, you know, some people are calling it 5G or LTE Plus, or the next wave of LTE is coming. And that's going to be, you know, you'll probably start to see that in Atlanta in the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be, now the devices won't support it yet, but you're going to see it, because the latest LTE is they can do it with a lot less towers. Mm-hmm. So they can, instead of having to put 10 access points on 50 towers, they can put 5 access points that'll cover the same 50 towers that it did. So it just is. So it'll get to market a lot quicker. They're upgrading. They're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, which they had to do with LTE to begin with. Mm-hmm. And LTE beat WiMAX in that quick VCR Betamax war. And so I think you're going to see, you know, a big push for bandwidth. And, you know, I think they're going to come heavy after the consumer side of things to say, you really don't need a phone line. And you know what? If we're giving you 5 meg to the internet off your wireless device, why do you need Comcast or WOW, or which we have in our area, or AT&T? I don't need an alternative to bring me my bandwidth anymore. I can just buy a cell phone package, and it might cost me a little more, but I don't have to worry about anything else.
What are you telling clients now? Imagine somebody says, "Hey, look, I'm ready to make an investment, and I want this investment to at least last 2 years." What's the right investment to make for an office environment, in your opinion?
Well, it depends really what their needs are. I mean, if it's a sales organization, I would say, you know, scale back the actual phone sets that sit on the desk. I mean, the phone, I have a $700 phone that sits on my desk. I couldn't tell you what it looks like because all I do is pick it up and need the handset. So that's really what IP, everything I do is there's a GUI interface in my on my computer, and it's a thin client, and I just start typing, and boom, you know, Sandra Bean's name comes up, I hit enter, and it dials, I pick up my handset, and I'm talking. Incoming calls, I can see, you know, everything from my GUI interface, so I don't ever have to really take my eyes off the PC screen. And so if phone systems have the GUI interface, and that GUI interface allows you to access that phone system. If I'm in a hotel, I bring up a soft phone, and I'm able to make and take calls like I'm sitting in my office in Chicago. Really, the handset becomes the most worthless part of it. I mean, we also sell products where when I walk into my office, that my iPhone becomes my wireless device off of my network. So if you call me and I'm not sitting at my desk, which a lot of people don't, I can pick that phone off from my iPhone. Now I'm talking to you like I'm on a landline, like we're talking today, because I'm using the wireless network and I'm going over our network IP. Mm-hmm. And so the quality of that call is phenomenal. Then we have the capability of, as I'm walking, if I'm talking to you, I'm walking out of the office, it's going to hand that call off automatically to the cell network so I can get in my car and drive away.
So that's, you're giving people continuity, and like you said before, simplicity is where it's at.
Right, and that the key to technology is simplicity, and the key is continuity. If you have those two things, you can do just about anything.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, Mike, I'm going to take this just a slightly different direction. You've been talking a lot about technology and giving us some really interesting tidbits as to where you think it's going and how you're counseling your clients at the moment. But I'm going to talk about a little bit more about your customers. I know your consulting practice is more or less a nationwide business where you're consulting and working with lots of clients around the country. But I also know that you're based, and I know that you personally are a diehard Chicago guy. So this is something I've thought about a lot since our days of working together in the mean streets of the city of broad shoulders, is what is it about doing business in Chicago that's different than doing business in any other city? I think our listeners in Atlanta will want to know.
I think that there's just not a lot of fluff. you don't have to be Slick Willie, and if you are, you probably are going to get thrown out of a building faster than you can turn your head. The one thing I love about Chicago and it's a city of broad shoulders is there's just not a lot of fuss. You know, if you're straight with people and they're straight with you, you're going to have a great relationship, and they want relationships and. I know, Sander, you and I have worked for large institutions, and we've worked for small guys, and I'll never forget the meeting, and I don't know if you were in this meeting, but and when they said, you know, it's all about the process, and I believe in the process, but nobody cares about the relationships. That's not what sells things. And I couldn't, to this day, and that was a large consulting firm telling us that, and I still have never been able to understand where they're coming from, because people buy from people. Mm-hmm. They don't buy from a process. You don't sign, on a kiosk somewhere. You sign a document, and as I tell my clients all the time, you can do whatever you want with my contract because I don't care. At the end of the day, I have to do what I've said. If I didn't, you're going to probably sue me anyway. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with whatever you want to put on there or any measures because at the end of the day, you got to make and take phone calls. And if you're not, I'm not happy either. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important. In Chicago, that works in Chicago. I mean, we recently sold a system out in Studio City, California to a major studio, and it was about 500 phones, and it was just, there was such a lack of trust, which was, not because of me, but because of the previous vendor. It was just really interesting. I'm like, well, we're going to be there next Tuesday, and we're going to put you sure you're going to be here? I'm like, yeah, you have all the equipment. We sent it out to you. Why would I leave now? But there's that lack of trust. And, I think that comes with experience. I think that comes with, my clients are the best salespeople we have. And they're usually the people that are in things and doing things. And call center technology has come so far, and it's very sophisticated. Well, I run a small business. We have a service department which uses a call center, but I don't have 100 agents like some of my clients do. So when I am selling call center products, I bring my clients out to those 100-person call center clients who know the product better than anybody because they're in it every day. Mm-hmm. And so, that to me is all about the relationships with people and how it works. And, there's no better salesperson than one of your clients selling a product for you.
Yeah,
because there's a trust factor.
Right. Two things. First, the reactions to what you've just said, which I think is right on. First of all, I hope I'm not being offensive to anybody to say that I don't think that Los Angeles is known as the trust capital of the world. Even Kevin's laughing at that one. The second thing is, which is interesting, and I think it plays well to the Chicago style that you're sort of outlining here, is that so many firms now are completely caught up in this thing called NPS, Net Promoter Score. And it's just what you mentioned real early in the broadcast, Mike, which is, the ability, would you or would you, making your survey so short that you're saying, would you or would you not recommend me to somebody else? And that's become the new gold standard.
And large corporations, it is really interesting because they get caught up in numbers and whatever the number of the flavor of the week is, they get caught up on. But, one of the things that drives me batty, crazy nuts, is the inability for people in large organizations to have any autonomy to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was on the phone last week with my bank, Bank of America, and and they literally, you couldn't find anybody to make a $30 decision. And it was amazing to me that these large organizations have handcuffed, and you said it's the ability to, am I now going to recommend that bank to somebody else? And I've had good experience with Bank of America, don't get me wrong, but it's these large organizations are so money hungry for these little fees and stuff that they've taken all the autonomy away from people. And it just is, it's sad. I mean, it's sad that somebody probably makes more than I, once I got to the supervisor, doesn't have the autonomy to make a $30 decision.
You were saying that's the they're putting the process over the relationship.
It's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like go back and look. It was unfortunate what happened, and it happens all the time in business. I get it, but you're absolutely, it's the process, and within that process, they don't have a box they can check to say, okay, let's get some common sense here. I can work with this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just them. It's, it's every large organization that, they don't want somebody to be throwing $30 at everybody or $20 or $10 in fees or fines. And it's just the way that it is now. I mean, and I think it's, you know, not to get on a rant with banks, but I mean, I'm a small business owner, and mm-hmm. and banks to small business owners the last 7 years have been brutal. And it's one of the biggest problems in, you know, how we get out of this, you know, and I've said it for a couple of years now, is that, you know, we had a recession. And I think everybody admits it, and all the numbers and all the stuff. And a recession is just a word. The only way you get out of a recession is the government talks its way out of a recession. And they've almost done that now. But for the small business guy, it's been a depression. Drive down your main street. Where's the coffee guy, the independent coffee guy, not the Starbucks guy? Where's the – how many cleaners have gone out of business? The hardware store. I mean, it's – and part of that's evolution, but that whole Main Street that these guys on CNBC and all these guys talk about Main Street, Main Street is in a depression and has been for 4 years now, and there is not a darn thing anybody's doing about it. And it is a really sad – statement, because I really believe that that's what's really going to get us out. It's the guy that's opening a business in your little downtown area, or a restaurant, or and he's employing four or five guys. And to me, we still need to focus on that. And you know, people have tried, but you know, it's a big business world.
Yeah,
people think the economy is great now because the markets are good.
Right, yeah. And you know what? I'll tell you something. When you say that, Mike, it makes a lot of sense to me. It's a fascinating concept, because really, those were the people that empowered their employees. Those were the people who really knew how to get the 100% on those Net Promoter Scores.
Because they had to, Sander.
Right.
They had to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty about it. But you're absolutely right.
I mean, Starbucks can be happy at 90% because they own every single corner. Right, I mean, you know, it's you don't have to be perfect when you've got there's really no other alternative if you're driving down the road. It's an interesting concept. Well, I mean, I'm not here to bash large businesses, right, Kevin? Not on business.
No. Exactly.
And I'm not here to bash large businesses either. I I've worked for Bell South. I've worked for some huge companies, and you know, they obviously do a lot, you know, they're a lot wealthier and know how to do things a lot better than I in a lot of this stuff. I really look out for the small guy, and I really think the small guy there's been no focus on, you know, a good friend of mine owns a liquor store here in Chicago, and it's a really interesting business. And, you know, there's no business in my mind that isn't interesting, and there's no business that I wouldn't consult about trying to get some reoccurring revenue to, but the liquor business, as a store owner, it's all about building inventory,
mm-hmm.
right? It's all – so he bought this store. He owned it previously, sold it, and bought it back 4 years ago, negotiated because he had relationships with the bank for an interest-only loan, and he was going to flip it 7 years later. Well, bank has been bought. They call the notes for no reason, always on time, always paid his bills. They call the notes because they decided they don't want to do business this small anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the guy's expenses have creeped up like $2,700 a month, you know, which means he's got to go find another job and still try to keep this liquor store going.
Wow. That's amazing.
So, I mean, did the bank have to do that? I don't know why, you know, but I know for a fact, because I was in the negotiations with him, never missed a payment, never was late. You know, I mean, he was the kind of client that I would love to have. Mm-hmm. Never miss a payment, never late. And yet, you know, they're throwing those guys to the curb. And it's just radically changed his business. And, you know, and those are the stories that, you know, I there's a ton of them. And you just sit there and go, you know, it just there needs to be some common sense in some of this stuff. And it just there isn't.
Right. And so, but I also would say, kind of on a hopeful mark, that it seems like, you know, there's a lot of drive and there's a lot of interest in entrepreneurial companies, small companies such as yours and mine for that matter, that are doing things differently. They're taking an approach that looks a little bit different than what you see on you know, in the mainstream these days.
Right.
And I think
the only way small companies survive is they have to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But even when they do something different, a friend of mine owns a company that basically Cisco sells all their switches and all their routers and all their equipment, and there's a little thing called SmartNet, which is their maintenance program. Mm. And it's 10% of the whole deal. And a friend of mine, this is one of the best ideas I ever heard. About 10 years ago, he went to Cisco and said, I just want to sell SmartNet. I've created this website and this toolkit so that if you're Crate and Barrel and you have 5,000 endpoints, you can manage them in my software. And if Northbrook or if Atlanta, Georgia, Crate and Barrel goes offline because of remodeling, he has the capability to bring it into his basket and say, we're offline, we shouldn't be paying for maintenance. Mm-hmm. Right. And this guy did a great job, had four employees. This was just a great business, and the other competitors went to Cisco and said, you got to shut him down because he's killing us on the SmartNet. And so you have that kind of attitude that these, you know, and like when I started my business, we had a relationship with the manufacturer, and our old bosses went and said something, and we couldn't get a distributorship that ultimately we got, but we had to
made it more
scramble
difficult
to get it, yeah, 2 years later and prove to them that we sold more than anybody else. So there still is a lot of gamesmanship. There's a lot of, I won't call it unethical, but there's a lot of people that do yield some power, and it's tough. The small guys are, you know, it's a battle every day, and you have to be ahead of it, and you have to be, you really have to be vigilant about keeping your brand and keeping, you know, and that goes without saying, you know, people talking trash about you and things that aren't true, and so there's a whole lot of that, and I've always told my employees and myself that you never stoop to that level, you know, and you don't talk ill of any competitor. You just don't do it. But there are a lot of people that do, and they get results. So,
yeah, and again, it goes back to you have to make sure you're getting 100%, you know, satisfaction rate, and that's why, right? Exactly.
That's exactly why. And there's a lot of stuff. There is a lot of stuff that you don't control. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked to you about this client's mad at me today because Comcast isn't coming through for them. Right. You know, I tell the clients all the time, I take responsibility for all your telecommunication. Doesn't mean I take the blame all the time, but there's nothing. I wish it was a piece of equipment I could replace and fix. It just isn't. It's somewhere in the cloud. And, you know, that's a challenge. So how do we get that resolved? And, you know, and you spend a lot of time and effort to try to do that. And they're still not totally right. thrilled because I take responsibility for their telecommunication systems, you know, and I do, and I believe in it. And I think it's a major part of what we do and what makes us different.
Absolutely. So let's segue into that because we're coming towards the top of the hour here. Tell us about, you're a serial entrepreneur. What other things are on your mind, Mike? You have lots of great ideas, interesting ideas about this industry, but I'm sure that your mind doesn't sleep when it comes to other things also. So tell us a little bit more what else is going on.
No, I'm very, very, very involved in youth baseball. In Georgia, especially your area, there's the Cabo organization or East Cobb, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
And that is like a machine that just rolls. And we've played those teams and tournaments. I am involved in a website called the Youth Baseball Report, and I own it with another gentleman. And it's really interesting because a lot of parents out there don't know all there is to know about travel baseball, and I have a son that's 13. I also have one that's a freshman in college, and it's not, they're no longer the days of little Jimmy having a nice little, you know, youth career, going to high school, playing for 4 years, and some college coach seeing him. That doesn't happen by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And people can agree with it or not agree with it, but you have to market players. If you want your son to have a chance to play in college or high-level high school or what have you, there's a big marketing component to it, and you have to go to the right events, and you have to talk to the right people, and a lot of parents just don't know. So what we've done is, it's more of an educational website, and what we've really tried to focus on is, I'm not here to argue if, because I get a lot of calls and people are like, I don't think this is right that you have to market your son. And I'm like, I'm not arguing if it's right or not. I that's not for me to determine. What I'm telling you, this is what's going on. And you need to be educated. And, I don't think, every parent at 6 years old and 10 and 12 think their kids are going to the professional ranks. And I'm not one of those parents. I want my kids to play sports because of the life lessons it teaches them.
Right, you're more
and
realistic.
The team and the camaraderie and the discipline that it takes to get better. I want them also to I see it with my older son who, has a softball team with all the buddies he played baseball with. That's my end goal. My end goal isn't to make him a superstar. My end goal is that he can play baseball and be competitive. But for those few parents that think they're kids are very good and can get some help with college education and things like that. That is what this website is for. And, it just is, it's in its infancy stages. We're running a lot of big events and it should be a lot of fun because, I love baseball. And, I played all the way through college and thought it was, I learned more in college playing baseball and football than I did, in the classroom. So I believe that everybody learns differently, but I think it's a great and a lot of fun and an opportunity to, as they say, do something you love and you never work a day in your life. So
I like it. I like that saying. That's great. Yeah, and absolutely, Mike. I mean, I think that there's a lot of life lessons can be taught from sports. Sport and baseball in particular is huge here in Georgia, along with a number of other places around the country. I do want to throw in, because I can, that Kevin, who's here in the studio with me, was playing a little football the other day. And we're coming towards the end, so I was hoping that Kevin could tell you about his football situation the other day.
Yeah, I got a chance to play in the Georgia Dome, and it was pretty awesome. But I think I'm getting too old to play football. I've been sore all week.
What now, Kevin? What did you play? What was it?
It was light tackle football in the Georgia Dome with a few friends. I know a guy that lets us get in and play, and I mean it was a blast to play. I'm a huge Atlanta Falcons fan, so got in there. I had about 120 yards and 3 touchdowns, but man, I was sore the next day.
Yeah. I was gonna say every year we had an alumni football game, which was tackle. And so my first year back, I went, and I remember laying on the ground after getting hit, saying, I will never do this again. because football is the greatest sport in the world, but if you're not, training and doing the things you do in two-a-days, and I would imagine you are feeling it every day. But that is, see, to me, there's no more fun than going out and playing catch or and that could be with a baseball or a football, there probably isn't any more fun you can have as an adult.
I know.
It really is, on guys' weekends, we always bring our mitts, and it's just so much fun to play catch. So that's great. I think that's awesome.
Well, and I'll tell you, Kevin, here's a little advice for you. I think you should stick to probably like a softball league or something.
Softball.
Like
I play softball, tennis, basketball, football. I just like being competitive. It's, that never dies. So.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it fun.
Well,
Yeah.
And Mike, I was just going to say that, it's fascinating talking to you because as much you have very interesting ideas on the industry. You seem to be, you're really a well-rounded guy. I mean, family person, also involved with this from a giving back perspective and giving back based on your experiences. And I think it's just awesome. And it's been really great spending an hour with you. So, go ahead.
Yeah, the last thing I will say is the greatest experience I ever had was I coached my son. We took a Team USA to Italy this last summer.
Wow.
Tuno, Italy. And that was the highlight of my athletic career, I think. It was
That's
incredible.
Great.
So.
That's awesome, Mike. Well, anyway, so what I was going to ask was, how I mean, probably people are interested in you in many different ways. What's the best way for people to find you? What are your best credentials that you can give over the?
I mean, probably obviously LinkedIn, Facebook, but you know, my email is mcarrane@listeninc.net, and that is by far probably the best place to get a hold of me.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I think we're going to close for the day, Kevin, unless we have anything else your mind.
I think that's it. That was a great interview. I love hearing about that and seeing people's insights on the change in industries. And I see a changing of the guard here when it comes to the phone industry and the business model behind it. So
it should change. And Michael, thank you so much. It's been invaluable having you on the phone today and interviewing you. So thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it, and I really appreciate it. And good luck with everything, guys.
All right. Excellent. Thank you.
And for High Velocity Radio, this is Sander Bean signing off for today without my co-host, Desiree. He'll be back next week. Thank you very much.